Hey, Pistons fans, we're excited to bring you this week's episode. As you know, we are Inside the Cylinder. We are your Detroit Pistons show here via Almighty Baller. In this week's episode, we talk about the NBA awards show and our takes on who won. We also get into Ice Cube's Big Three tourney and if it has a future. We then dive deeper into Luke Kennard, the Pistons' number 12 draft pick, and our excitement for Summer League. All that and more in this week's episode. As always, you can listen to this show on Almighty Baller, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Enjoy the show.
Joe's got an addendum against fidget spinners for all those out there who spin. I just got one today for free, so didn't purchase it. I think that's a big qualifier.
It's nothing personal. It's just not a purchase that I would make. I don't have anything against it, but
if you got
I didn't
one
expect
free,
you to spin it in my face on our Skype chat, so it was a little shocking, but I'm fine with it.
Would you?
Do you do any tricks, or do you just spin it repeatedly?
I don't know, man. I've seen like videos of tricks. My whole thing is, it's like, all right, so you hold it, and I want to be able to do it with one hand and get it moving quickly, but I can't. So I got to do like the second hand to make it move. You know, I have to use two hands to get the spin going.
Right.
And I don't know. I'm not. I will never get to the level of tricks.
I feel like they're gonna come out with some souped up fidget spinners here.
Oh, they have. I've seen them.
Yeah, like yo-yo fidget spinners doing some weird stuff.
If you go to, if they're like fidget gram, I guess you can call it, like,
no
fidget.
I won't.
All right, no, that's fair.
Yeah,
I guess we'll stop that part. So yeah, Joe, you want to get us going on some of these topics?
Like, yeah,
basketball related topics.
Yeah, pretty big week for the postseason of the NBA. Came out with the awards finally. I don't think it's ever taken this long for them to announce MVPs. In fact, at least in recent memory, it hasn't taken this long after the season for them to announce those awards. So I'm pretty excited about that. They did come out with an awards show. Drake and Nicki Minaj and others made some appearances. So that was exciting. David, I know you tuned in for that. How was that from an entertainment standpoint?
I mean, I watched it. I watched some of it. I didn't watch all of it by any means. I thought it was clunky. It was, I don't know. The room was really small. The stage was really small. Drake.
Where was it at?
Kinda,
do you know?
I want to say L.A., but I don't know. I went to type in fidget spinner. NBA award show.
I did see the video.
It's gotta be LA.
I saw the video with Drake in
Will Ferrell.
Video segment with him and Will Ferrell, which I thought was pretty funny. And
it was funny.
Drake's a good actor.
Drake's good. Yeah, no, Drake's good. I thought Drake. I don't know where it's at. I'm just gonna say. I'm guessing LA. I can't imagine you being able to get all the guys there without it being LA. That's my only rationale.
Yeah, during the off.
But there were like these big circular tables, almost like it was, you know how most awards show there, it's kind of like you're at a movie theater. You know, it's like theater seating. It's like there are rows of seats because there's that many people there. There's not that many people that are involved in these awards. So, you know what? There's 12 awards, I believe, that are voted on by media members. And then there's like the wacky awards, like the
best
dress, clutch shot. Yeah, like best dress, like, which is fine. You know, I think that stuff was pretty, you know, that's good for the fans.
Did Westbrook win that?
For biggest, no.
Best dressed.
Oh, best dressed. I don't know. See, I don't really know all the award winners for like the wacky stuff. I only watched mostly the end of it, and I caught some of it in the middle. So I watched the Russell Westbrook part, But yeah, so sorry, just to go back to the forum, they had the guys from TNT there. You know, they had Kenny and Charles and Shaq and gosh, what's the other guy's name? I should
Kenny, Charles, the, Shaq, and I mean they're the main ones. Dennis Smith.
No, no,
or not Dennis,
no, no,
Dennis
no, 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 not the player. The guy that's on every broadcast.
Oh, Kevin
on every Serafin? Ernie Johnson.
Oh, or, oh, EJ. Oh, for some reason I was thinking of his backup.
So they had them in like a live setup. So they were, it'd be Drake was stage left and they were stage right. And they were set up there like permanently in like their own little setup. And it was kind of weird. Like just to see them like, all right, guys, be funny. And like, it'd be them trying to kind of emulate the TNT broadcast, but in a live forum. So I thought that was really weird. And I don't think that they should do that. I think if you're just going to have a host, just have Drake be the host and just have him roll with it.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
So, yeah. So
did they do the Oscars zoom in on the five nominees for the award and their reactions? And
they did. Really? I didn't think they would. Yeah, they panned into James Harden pretty heavily after Russell Westbrook was announced MVP. So I thought that was like,
it has to be so awkward as a nominee to you know. I mean,
it's weird. It's weird to go get an award like that. The trophy's massive. Like I remember at least the MVP trophy was so large. The base of it is like a foot and it's solid. And you could just see like Russell Westbrook's like, what the hell am I supposed to be doing with this thing right now? Yeah. So he just like handed it back pretty quickly. All in all, I mean, Russell Westbrook's acceptance speech was pretty awesome. And just to kind of see him like get pretty emotional, especially for Russell Westbrook in like that kind of sense, not in like the I'm going to dunk on you, Russell Westbrook. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he's generally pretty stoic and intense. So I'll definitely have to go back and watch that speech. Is it above Durant's you're the real MVP speech in your book? I don't think anything can top that.
No, I don't think anything can top that. I mean, his speech was a lot longer. I think Durant's was longer. It felt like it was just because he kept on saying who the real MVP was so many times. I don't know if that's actually how the clock would bear it. But it was really good. You know, he was thanking his... He really got emotional when he started to thank his family, then especially his younger brother. That's when it was like, am I getting choked up right now?
A little
now?
Emotional,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, no, it was cool.
Yeah,
it was a really good cap.
I think regardless, if you were on the James Harden side of things for the MVP conversation, you can't really be mad that Westbrook ended up winning it. I mean, at the end of the day, we really, really have to tip our hat to the fact that he averaged a triple-double, which... a couple years ago, people thought was damn near impossible in the modern NBA. Of course, the pace has quickened a bit, and there's some factors on his side. You know, he has a high usage rate, but
when Oscar Robertson had his triple double season, the pace was quicker then.
Yeah, I think they sped it up. MVP voting that year as well, I believe, behind Chamberlain and I think Bill Russell won it that year. But everybody had crazy stats. Regardless, well-deserved by Westbrook.
Yeah, I mean, you're splitting hairs, right? Like, I talked about this a little bit with Joe Borelli. It's like, yeah, I wanted Harden to win. I thought that he had a more, I don't know, necessarily impressive season, but I just think in totality. But at the end of the day,
yeah,
am I mad that Russell was? No, he definitely deserved it too. You know, I thought you're splitting hairs. They're both, we should just be thankful that it was that good of a season where that race was that tight. And then Kawhi crept in there and made a legitimate case for himself. It was a great year for NBA fans.
Yeah, definitely. And a couple Houston Rockets, the Houston Rockets player and the coach did get awards. Mike D'Antoni won, I believe, his second Coach of the Year award. I think he won in 2005 with the Suns, something around there. Well-deserved, in my opinion, as well. I mean, with Coach of the Year, you can really give it to anyone. I mean, Steve Kerr was out a decent chunk in the playoffs. You know, Ty Lue. I mean, teams that make it further in the playoffs, you can always make a case for them.
Eric Spoelstra made a pretty good case himself.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, with Mike D'Antoni, I mean, just the turnaround that that team had, it was a 14-game improvement this year. The Rockets were pretty unwatchable last year with Harden and Dwight Howard. Got rid of him, added some folks like Gordon and Anderson, and one of the more fun teams to watch at this point in time. And I think that it's a great relationship from a player-coach perspective, him and James Harden. You know, I think
it's awesome.
Kevin Durant said that he is an MVP already, and I think he will be in the near future. So. Good on him. I think well deserved too.
Also for the MVP, Michael Jordan sent Russell Westbrook a note, and it was like branded in Jordan because they're both, you know, Russell Westbrook signed a Jordan brand, and it said something along the lines of, "I won my first MVP before I won my first championship too."
That is a Jordan thing. That is cool. But didn't LeBron win an MVP before his first championship? Didn't Durant win an MVP before his first? Like, a lot of guys won MVPs before the first.
Yeah, no, it's cool though. I mean, it's saying like you'll get yours. Yeah. Just, you know, keep working at it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just the Warriors League. Like, you have a place here. You're the MVP. So, no, pretty cool, man.
Yeah. So, you know, all in all, I mean, can't really be mad at any of the results. You know, I thought that, you know, Mike D'Antoni definitely deserved it. And Greg Pop, or I think it was Spoelstra second, Popovich third. Rookie of the year, Malcolm Brogdon by default, because he played enough minutes. If Joel Embiid was healthy enough, he, you know, definitely would have won it. Hard to win it when you play 30 games. Six man, sure. Eric Gordon, yeah, like, all right, fine. Most improved, Giannis, for sure. I mean, he just took that next step.
Yeah, I mean, he was good the year before. I believe he averaged 16.9 points a game, and then he jumped up to 22.9 points. Kind of put himself in that upper echelon of just complete game changers, where everybody knew he was going to get there at some point, but he's officially there. So that's
for sure.
Yeah. Now, you know, next step for him is probably MVP talk within the next, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 years.
And who knows, maybe defensive player of the year, you know, with that length and stuff, if he is able to kind of, I don't really know, you know, the metrics are what you get blocks and good team defense and you know, get your hand on balls and you'll be right there in consideration. Yeah. Draymond definitely earned his. That was awesome. I thought Draymond definitely, you know, he was runner up the last 2 years. So I think it's, and then especially when you watch him in the finals, even though he wasn't that great on the offensive side of the ball, just a game changer on defense. So good for Draymond. And, you know, I'm sure there's Michigan State fans that listen to this that are probably happy too.
You are seeing a shift in the defensive player of the year where it used to be strictly big guys for the most part. Your Ben Wallace's, Marc Gasol won, Tim Duncan, as well as others. And now it's becoming the versatile defender who can guard multiple positions. We see that with Kawhi Leonard, who can switch on guys. He's long. Draymond Green can guard in the post. He can guard guards. He can switch on you wherever across the floor. He can get rebounds. And, you know, Giannis is in that conversation as a guy as well who can switch off guys and guard anyone on the floor. So versatility is a huge key there.
I think lots of times with that, it's just how much do you want to focus on it? And is it going to be something that's going to be, you know, that you're going to sort of make, I don't know. If you're just going to put the work into becoming defensive player of the year, are you really going to focus that much on the defensive side of the ball? Giannis, you know, he's probably a bit away from that, you know, type of focus. But no, I mean, he definitely could get there. And yeah, you're right, Joe. He's one of those guys now where he's a cornerstone for sure. And you surround him with talent and then you never know what you're going to do with that team.
Yeah.
So let's move on to other in more important basketball news. The Big Three League.
Oh, do you real quick while we're talking about? I don't know if you want to touch on this right now, but defense first team.
Oh
like,
yeah,
I would like to go into that a little bit. Just quickly. Not that there's anything too crazy about it. There's a lot of guys who had issues with who was on the first team and who got voted for in general. I think specifically a guy that stands out was Avery Bradley, who was. Twitter was lit regarding the fact that he wasn't first team. CJ McCollum, Lillard, Devin Booker, Evan Fournier, all Jamal Murray, who was a rookie last year, but all guys that he would guard, were just blown away by the fact that he wasn't on that list. And I think you have to take that with more than a grain of salt, because they're the people that are actually getting guarded by him. So his teammate, Isaiah Thomas, actually got, I believe, a 13 vote.
Did he? Yeah, I'm just trying to look that up.
Yeah, yes, he did. Yeah.
Isaiah, let's see that. Wait a minute. Oh, wow, wait. Isaiah Whitehead, I see him. Are you sure?
Pretty much the same player. Yeah, I'm positive. He even tweeted something today about he was thanking the writer who gave him the votes. I don't want to put that writer on blast, but I do believe, as well as voting for Isaiah Thomas for third team all defense, he also didn't include LeBron James on his MVP voting. He had some very, very weird votes.
Yeah, no, I saw that there was one guy from Mexico that just had some wacky votes where it's like, do you either A, understand basketball, or B, watch it? Because, like, I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell by those results.
I know it was second team. It was all defensive second team for Isaiah Thomas. But
all, that's insane.
Yeah, that's offensive.
Yeah, no, I think that there's that's just, I don't know, you got to lose your rights, because he's clearly one of the worst defensive players.
He might want to lose it, actually. He might just want to take it away from him, so he's just making.
See, I've been wanting to write about soccer this whole time. Yeah, NBA shit. It's around
transition.
No, yeah, I think the one of the craziest things is nobody. Oh, I'm an idiot. No wonder I was on the wrong. I was on the wrong list. I was reading. I think I was still on the rookie team when I was looking for Isaiah Thomas. Yeah, that's insane. I think one thing that kind of stands out is that only one player in the East made first or second team all NBA. Like, that's kind of just disrespectful to John Wall, to Avery Bradley, to guys that are like game changers on the defensive side of the ball that play in the Eastern Conference. Like, you know, I mean, was Danny Green that much of a better defensive player than John Wall and Avery Bradley? Like, yeah. are we going there? Yeah. Is Tony Allen still that terrifying ball stopper? And how many games, like, Tony Allen was injured quite a bit this season. So I don't know. It's kind of
That's a tough one. You don't know how much voters go off of.
Yeah, Isaiah Thomas does have a vote.
Stats or the eye test. So I think that really all depends.
Cody Zeller got a vote.
Nice.
KCP only got one vote. Come on, no. All right. Well, yeah. No, I kind of wraps up the awards. Joe. Yeah. What were we going to move on to? The big three?
The big three, yeah, which I didn't tune in for. So you're going to really have to break that one down for me. I do know that some things went down, injuries, and just old men out of shape playing basketball.
That's what happens when old men out of shape play basketball competitively. They injure themselves.
Yeah. Did you watch live, or did you just see?
No, I just watched highlights and like game recaps. First thing, you know, so for people that don't know, you should know, but you might not. The Big Three League is the 3-on-3, like, it's kind of like a champions tour of, you know, old players, retired players. It's headed by Ice Cube, and I believe Allen Iverson are, you know, two business partners with this league. And it's a 3-on-3 format. Pickup, the only thing that's different than at least most normal pickups are, it's not make it take it, it's, you know, make it and swap. There's a 4-point shot. There's like certain areas across the court beyond the 3-point line that are marked 4-pointers. You know, it's got a little wackiness into it, but it's not that wacky. Like, you're watching it, it's hoops.
Yeah. These guys have a lot of pride too, so
they do. They do. Definitely a little bit more below the rim than I like my basketball that I, you know, that I'm tuning into. But
were there some jams?
You know, there were some jams. Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, the Drew League's more entertaining because there's just way more athletic guys in that league.
Young Bucks with springs.
Yeah, Young Bucks with springs that are playing in Euro or playing college ball or about to go to college ball. But no, I mean, it was pretty cool. But yeah, there were some injuries. White Chocolate, Jason Williams, just completely sorry, don't mean to laugh. It's just the old men hurting themselves thing is a funny concept.
Yeah, it's painfully funny.
Oh, he just went like limp midair, holding knee, like knee clutched midair, fell. And yeah, it didn't look like it didn't look his knee didn't appear to do anything insane, but it wasn't good. Corey Maggette, the ankle, you know, the ankle. Corey Maggette.
He always had Corey Maggette's
ankles. He did. He did.
Former Piston. His was, for a second.
Yeah, former Piston, and I think Piston's coach.
Quentin Richardson.
He's an assistant coach. Oh, that's Quentin Richardson. You're right. It was fine. The crowd loved it. The crowd definitely loved it. I don't know the future of this league or anything like that, but I don't really care. It's fine, you know. I think it's something where people seem to enjoy it, and we'll see where it goes. It got pretty good ratings from what I've seen. It got pretty good reviews, but I think when the headlines are how many old men got injured, that's not the best thing.
How did former Piston Allen Iverson look? He's put on a little bit of weight.
Yeah,
Did he have some of the swagger still?
No. He couldn't really. I think he had 6 points in like 9 minutes, or he had like 3 points maybe. He was like 1 for 6. He said afterwards that he's not going to be playing much. He's player coach, so he said he's going to kind of limit his minutes.
Yeah, I feel like Billups, but if he did play in this league, he would have torn it up just because he's so fresh out of the league, and he looks like he's still in pretty condition. You know, you can still hit threes. I don't know. What did he retire 3 years ago?
Who we're talking about? Oh, Seabill? Yeah, he was going to play, but then now he's in under consideration for the president of basketball operations for the Cavaliers.
Yeah.
So he kind of pulled himself from it.
Yeah.
I don't know who looked good.
No. Rashard Lewis.
He didn't look. I mean, Kwame Brown looked like a beast.
Another former Piston.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
Whoa. Yeah, you put in the former Pistons on the Big Three League. We might be getting a chip quicker than we thought.
Seriously. God. He was beasting in the paint.
He was, man. He was throwing down jams. He had 17 points. Pretty much the format is first to 60.
I think really what needs to happen is we need to get Darko Milicic in that league next year. I would for sure tune in.
Yeah, but he'd have to be drunk.
Yes.
I don't want a sober Darko Milicic playing basketball.
No, definitely drunk. Maybe with his shirt off. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, for sure. And those like scary sort of, you know, Eastern European tattoos he's got.
Yeah, the radical political tattoos he has. That's the only way he can play.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. I'll have to watch some highlights. I will watch the NBA. I will watch Westbrook's speech before watching that. But if I find time, I will watch some of the 3-on-3, the Big Three League.
It's kind of interesting because both of these things, like the NBA Award Show and the Big Three League, there was a lot of excitement. There is a lot of excitement around both of them. And it's also one of those things where I think, you know, either they're going to be going on for a long time, and obviously they're not reliant on each other, but each entity will go on for a long time, or it'll be done in like the next 2 years. I don't think that the NBA is going to have a huge leash on that award show. You know, if they think that it isn't a good look or it's not successful, I think they'll just pull the plug. The Big Three League, you know, I mean, Ice Cube, he's a businessman. If the thing's losing money, he's gonna part ways with it. So
yeah, definitely. And that's all dependent on the quality of players that you get who are willing to play in the Big Three League as well. Like if some guys saw the injuries and the embarrassment that certain players were put through, then they're not going to want to sign up next year. But we'll see with that. I think with the NBA awards, if they do get the ratings, then they will run it back and switch it up a little bit. But you know, I guess time will tell. Who knows? With all that being said, should we dive into some Luke
next topic?
Yeah, some Luke Kennard.
Yeah, let's get into the Luke Kennard train.
And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Do you play daily fantasy? If so, you should be playing on Draft. Get this. Your chances of winning on Draft are almost 3 times better than on FanDuel or DraftKings. The data shows almost 90% of players lose on DraftKings. On FanDuel, over 40% of the money goes to just 1% of the players. If you're not a pro and not spending hours a day on fantasy, you should be playing on Draft. You'll win more often. It's statistically proven. On Draft, you do a simple snake draft, just like at the beginning of your season-long league. You can do drafts whenever you want. They last for just 1 day, and they take only minutes to complete. Join me. Download Draft now. Just search Draft in the App Store, and it will come up first. Be sure to enter the promo code ALMIGHTY100 when you download, and you will get a 100% bonus when you deposit. Again, search Draft in the App Store and be sure to enter the promo code ALMIGHTY100. That's ALMIGHTY100. Now back to David and Joey for some Pistons basketball.
All right, Luke Kennard.
Kennard dog. Kind of like Nard dog from The Office.
That is good.
That is good.
It might stick. We'll see.
It might. I bet he's so young that he doesn't even know what I would be talking about. That's a window, man.
Yeah,
The Office is that might have been something his parents were watching.
When did that stop airing? That wasn't that long ago, was it?
Man, it probably stopped airing about 7 years ago.
Okay.
And it was in his heyday, you know, 10 years ago.
But some of the other players might have watched The Office, that, and they might throw that nickname at him. Who knows? He's gonna get some sort of label in terms of nicknames, but yeah. So Luke Kennard, I didn't know a lot about him. Didn't watch a lot of Duke this year. I did grow up a UNC fan, so honestly, I didn't watch a lot of college basketball in general because I was watching NBA. But got him at the 12th slot. Talked a little bit about him last week. Donovan Mitchell was there. If Malik Monk would have fallen, we would have taken him.
Is that? I don't know if that's even confirmed, to be honest with you.
Stan Van Gundy said the top 11 people on our board went top 11. So I'm not 100% sure. That's just
they would have then.
That's
that
the quote
sense.
That I saw. So that's no
shame. Does that mean we would have taken Collins, you think?
That's what I was wondering. Collins.
I would not have been happy. Or Lauri Markkanen. It's like, you just drafted Lauri Markkanen last year.
Oh, man. I kind of like Lauri Markkanen. Yeah.
So do I. I mean, watching his film is kind of like,
he's man,
he might just be, yeah. But we've seen that prospect before.
Yeah, we have. But he has a different level of smooth. Just like I think that we've seen the Kennard, similar Kennard prospects, shooters, with sort of a lack of athleticism in comparison to other NBA players. I think a lot of the main comparisons that are being thrown out right now are fellow Duke shooters, Kyle Singler, J.J. Redick. I heard Devin Booker talked about just because of their height, their position, their shooting ability. And I've seen
Jimmer Fredette and Dougie McBuckets.
Okay. I don't see Fredette at all. I can see some McBuckets, though.
Wait, what's McBucket's actual last name again? McDermott. I just only call him McBuckets.
It's McBuckets for all intents and purposes.
It should be McNot a lot of buckets.
Yeah. Because
that man ain't scoring money buckets.
Yeah, we'll see next year. Maybe.
All right, let's talk about these comparisons.
But yeah, so I don't really see it with any of those guys. What's your take?
All right, so I'm just going to kind of bang through them. So let's just go with who I definitely don't think, for sure. I don't see a lot of Jimmer Fredette, just because I thought Jimmer Fredette was more of a ball stopper, more of a way smaller, a chucker, and he didn't really show too much versatility in his game other than the fact that, you know, he had the ultimate green light. That wasn't necessarily impressive. I thought he was going to be a bust when he was drafted, and, you know, lo and behold. Then you got McBuckets, or, you know, Doug McDermott. I prolific scorers in college. McDermott just isn't the athlete that that Kennard is. He doesn't look like the athlete that Kennard is. He doesn't look like he has the handle that Kennard has. He doesn't look like he has the versatility in his game as much as... Because the one thing that I like about Kennard a lot, and we're going to talk about what we like about him, is that he just can score in so many different ways. I just think he's a more impressive scorer that will translate a little bit better, where I think McDermott, you know, he might become one of the more prolific three-point shooters in the league at some point, but I don't think he's going to be... You know, I think that's what he's going to be, is just a shooter.
Yeah, he won't be a playmaker, and he's not going to be your primary ball handler, and he's not... He can't dribble with his head up and see guys like Kennard can see guys and pass like he can. So, Kennard doesn't have, like, nasty handles, but he's in control, and, you know, he's strong enough that defenders can't take the ball away from him, and he can keep his head up and find other guys, which none of these other players can do.
Quick question. So I think you, like you said, you used to watch a lot of UNC basketball. And especially around the time, you know, the JJ Redick time. And I watched college hoops quite a bit then. I remember watching JJ Redick because I think he was a 3 or 4 year player, and liking him. But what are your thoughts to the JJ Redick comparison?
I just don't really see it at all. They have completely different games. JJ Redick came to Duke as a shooter. In his first year or two, he was strictly a shooter. And then he develops a little bit of dribble penetration later on, his junior and senior year, a little bit. He didn't have many secondary third and fourth moves like Kennard does. He also didn't run the offense. He didn't really run the offense. They had, I forget their point guard.
Was it Chris Duhon?
Duhon, yeah.
Chris Duhon was there for 4 years, yeah, and I think he was probably his prime. Yeah, he was the guard that was handling the ball most of that time.
Yeah,
and finding JJ Redick off screens.
Yeah, so JJ Redick was running a Reggie Miller, Rip Hamilton, Kyle Korver sort of role in the offense, and just coming off screens and trying to find open space. And again, he did get to the point where he could handle the ball a little bit and make some plays, but it wasn't his role to handle the ball, and. You know, run the offense. So I don't see that comparison much at all.
All right. So we say, and Kyle Singler, let's just, you know, Kyle Singler was pretty good in transition at Duke. What I remember, he was pretty good in the mid range, and he was an okay 3-point shooter. And he was a productive, you know, solid small forward in college. And you can't really fault him for what he did in college. He did what he was supposed to do. But won a national championship, and he was pretty good. He was a lot better when he was on the Pistons than when he was traded to the Thunder. You know, people kind of forget that because he's more of an afterthought now. But he wasn't that awful on a pretty awful team.
He's not good though.
He wasn't good though, but he wasn't the worst player on the Pistons.
Yeah, which is saying a lot about the Pistons at that point in time too. Unfortunately.
But no, Kennard doesn't... It's just... I guess let's go into who we think that he does compare to.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is interesting because there's a player that comes to mind, and I don't think he compares to this player, but I hope that he can develop a similar game to this player and have a similar role. Manu Ginobili.
Who? Manu.
He's That's a good. Shooter. I think they're both crafty. They both have really good footwork. Manu is sort of a secondary ball handler. He can bring it up the court. You know, he comes off the bench. He can pretty much do it all on offense. He's not insanely athletic. He's a bit more athletic than Kennard is. I see a little bit of it there.
Really solid in the pick and roll too, which you've seen Kennard is, I think he was 97th percentile in pick and roll offense.
Yeah.
With the ball in his hands in college. So, and Ginobili was awesome in the pick and roll. Like, he would just find guys on the dime, you know, the roll man. He was enough of the threat where you just had to respect Ginobili when the ball's in his hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has his head up. He can dribble well. Again, he's not the most athletic player, but he can find his spots. And I think once Kennard can develop an NBA body and get his conditioning and strength up there, I think that, he can turn the corner on guys a little bit more and develop some of that Euro swag that, I mean, he's from Argentina, but, you know, for all intents and purposes, with the Euro stuff in his game, it's, you know, he's got the Euro swag. So I think he can develop a little bit of that within his game. I would like to see him play a little bit of that role for the Pistons. I don't think he's, you know, if we're about to max KCP, I don't think he's our future shooting guard, but I think he can be the first person off the bench who can contribute in significant ways that affects the game similarly to a starter.
It's also something where, you know, he's significantly, at this point, he's significantly younger than KCP. So you see what you have in Kennard. We are going to pay out KCP for sure. I mean, what, he's 3 years younger. I mean, it's not significantly younger, excuse me.
Yeah.
But young enough to where if, depending on what you have in Kennard, depending on what you have in KCP, you can analyze what you have in your pieces at that time. Because if he does become as good as Manu Ginobili, not saying that he will, you know, that Ginobili played off the bench at the Spurs, but he's a starter on every single team in that era. He just fit that role perfectly.
And people and talk about cool him in possibly the Hall of Fame conversation. So,
for sure. And deservedly so. All right. So this isn't my player comp, but one thing that I kept on thinking about when I was watching film on Kennard was, so Kennard likes the ball in the 3-point stance quite a bit. Joe?
Yeah. Oh. I lost you.
Oh, sorry. We're just going back to our player.
Liking the ball in the 3-point stance.
Yeah. So he likes the ball in the 3-point stance quite a lot. And the way that he holds it, the way that he has such a quick trigger and is so decisive with his next move, speaking on Kennard now, is it reminded me a lot of Carmelo Anthony. Where, like, literally, as soon as he sensed a sliver of space, the ball was going up. And Melo is the same type of player. That ball is heavily in 3-point stance. He's very much, like, locked and loaded with that ball in his hands. And as soon as he notices just a sliver of space, that ball is going up. And it was, I don't know, that was just one thing that kind of hit me when I was watching. I was like, damn, man, like, as a defender, you are so concentrated on that basketball and so concentrated on, you know, where you're going. You're, you know, especially with Kennard's sort of hesitation steps, his head fakes, his ability to get players off of their feet. It's a weapon. So it just reminded me of how players kind of reacted and are so much on their tiptoes when Carmelo Anthony's locked and loaded. The same thing as what I was feeling when I saw Kennard.
Yeah. And so, he's got a sweet stroke. And one thing I'll say about that is his ability to shoot off the dribble, which Melo is so nasty. One dribble, pull up shot, quick trigger. Kennard is incredible off the dribble, which is another reason why I don't see the comparison to some of these wings who come off screens and are catch and shoot. And is one of the reasons why I really am starting to love his game, because he has that in his arsenal from basically anywhere. Pull-up shots, just one dribble around a pick and roll. He can pick it up and shoot. So not many guys can do that. Steph Curry can do it. Clay. Obviously, Clay, Kyrie Irving. I mean, a lot of guys can do it, but they're all elite. So just to have a little bit of that skill, and yeah, you're right, it reminds me a bit of Melo, especially with his craftiness in order to get to his spot and find his shot. I can definitely see that.
One thing that when you and I were kind of messaging each other back and forth, I think it was yesterday or the day before or whatever. What I noticed about Kennard was how light he is on his feet and how just insanely balanced he is. Just like you were saying, he could be trying to lose a guy off screens, you know, cutting back, cutting up and down, you know, moving around the 3-point line, have the ball in his hands, off the pick and roll. Just any single time he's elevating for a shot, he just looks like he is perfectly squared up, perfectly aligned with the shot. And, you know, he's money. Like, he was money last year. He's an efficient scorer. He averaged 53% from field goal, field goal shooting, 44% from three, and 86% from the free throw stripe on five attempts per game. So, you know, I think his ability just to go in, get some contact, remain balanced is just something that will translate to the NBA. And that shooting, man, if you can keep that going, it doesn't seem like something that's going to break down. It's not something where he has to rely on too much other than balance, good footwork, and good basketball IQ to be prolific at it at the next level. So I'm really getting pretty high on this pick, honestly.
Yeah, and I think so. He shot 52% from two.
No, he just shot 53% overall.
Oh, okay. I mean, I know he had a great 2-point field goal percentage, and I saw some sort of stat on it. I don't have it at my fingertips, but the majority of his shots, they weren't in the paint. He does have trouble getting actually to the rim, and he settles with, 8 to 12 footers a lot. And a lot of that is due to his lack of quickness. But it does reflect the fact, I mean, that just highlights his 2-point field goal percentage, because those aren't layups. He's not getting dunks. Those are shots. Those are long twos or, mid-range twos.
He led the league, he was, I think, fourth overall in floater percentage in the league, or in the NCAA. Like, he was most efficient floater game, right and left. He can get the shot off.
Do you see him getting... So KCP, which we're going to get to in a little bit, he's going to be out a couple games because of his DUI. Do you see him getting significant playing time, or do you think he's just going to be garbage minutes? Or do you think we're going to send him to the D League to get time? Or what do you think he should do?
Okay. Yeah, I was actually going to ask you the same question. I don't want him to go to the D League. I don't think he needs to spend time there. I'd rather see him, what he can do in NBA minutes, right off the bat. Honestly, where would the Pistons benefit from playing Darren Hilliard in those minutes with KCP being out? I don't really see it. He's not going to be the future of your team. He's not going to be, hopefully, NBA, your guy. Yeah, in the NBA, possibly. You never know. I think that those minutes would be better spent on at least developing Kennard. And I don't know, man. I said that after the draft, on the draft episode, I'm concerned that he's not going to get minutes. But as Laz said it pretty well, if you're a player that fits a role on an SVG team, he's going to play you in that role. And yes, you do have to, earn it. You have to be sharp defensively or he'll pull you. So I think he'll get a shot, but I don't know how long his leash is going to be.
Yeah.
Just like with Stanley.
Especially if that skill is shooting.
Yeah.
What's up? Sorry, you broke up.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, I mean, I was saying, especially like if you look at Stanley as kind of a benchmark to minutes, there were times last year where we needed Stanley defensively. We needed him to be on the wing guarding just because things were breaking down. It just, you needed someone to know their role a little bit. And I feel like Stanley does know his role. He gets his shot off when he can. And just to see how short that leash is, has been with Stanley Johnson over the past couple of years, it doesn't give me much hope to think that Stan Van Gundy is going to have a super long leash when it comes to Kennard.
Yeah. And again, if he can make shots, and we don't have a lot of really good 3-point shooters on this team, then he will certainly get minutes. I think it was Laz on the last episode, who envisioned him playing Reggie Bullock-esque minutes in Reggie Bullock-esque role. And I think that's pretty accurate, and we'll see what he can do in that sample size, take it from there. I mean, he's not going to start at any point in time over KCP, but excited to see what he brings in the summer league, and we'll see what Stan Van Gundy is thinking. But I did want to touch on a couple of his negatives. I mean, what would hold him back from getting major minutes? Lack of athleticism. He only has a 6'5" wingspan. So he's got those dino arms, which is fine, but it does restrict him a little bit on defense.
And on offense.
Yeah, just to get his shot, really, and to shoot over defenders. He does have difficulty turning the corner and getting to the hoop, which I touched on a little bit earlier. I do think with NBA conditioning, he can fix that a little bit. And I think that he can incorporate more of a change of pace, more of a herky-jerkiness a la Manu Ginobili or Steph Curry, some of the guys who can just change pace really quickly and shake defenders. I hit you up earlier. He does use a lot of secondary moves. He does jump stops in the paint, and he will pivot or a lot of spin moves. And then up and unders, which I love because I think that's lost in the NBA. I think with a lot of athletes, they don't develop those skills early on. So I think it's great.
Head fakes
to this point so far.
Hezzies.
Yeah, head fakes. Yeah.
Just head fakes, like, and hezzies, man. They're nasty. Players are
using his
jumping
shoulder
on trampolines.
To create a little bit of space.
Oh, he's so good at that.
Yeah. So I think that pro defenders are just too savvy and too athletic to let three or four moves go by without them stripping the ball or blocking a shot. So that's concerning on the offensive end. I don't really even have to go into defense because we just know it's not there right now. But
I'll go into defense a little bit.
Sure.
I mean, some of the stuff that I saw that's concerning, and like you said, Joe, this is going to be the stuff that if it's happening on the court 2, 3, 4 possessions in a row, Stan's going to call a timeout and pull him right away. He's not going to let a 10-point lead become a 2-point lead because he wants to get Kennard some PT. Now, is that the right move? You know, I guess it depends on where we're at in the playoff race at that point. But, you know, generally speaking, I think both you and I are like, we would want the rookie to take their lumps a little bit to kind of learn on the fly. But what I've seen that will get him benched or get him, you know, very limited minutes is he gets swallowed up by screens, man. He looks like Reggie Jackson out there. And that scares me because especially now where teams are sort of emulating, you know, that old Pistons, Reggie Miller, now Klay Thompson, Steph Curry type of offense where you're just running motion offense and you're just killing a guy on screens. I don't know why you wouldn't put Kennard in that ringer, because whenever you saw him chasing a player around screens, he would just get absolutely lost. He'd be like double guarding a power forward and double teaming a power forward and his player would be wide open. That was concerning. Another thing is bigger wings, even if they didn't look athletic, even if they looked like they were, you know, okay college players, but it was like players that I didn't recognize at all that aren't going to be in the NBA, just plowed through him to get to the cup and finished pretty easily. And if you're having Paul George, Jimmy Butler, you know, or even guys like, you know, Jay Crowder or, you know, Markieff Morris, you know, those types of guys get on Kennard on him, they're just going to get right to the cup super easy. So I think those are some real concerns on the defensive side of the ball that you can't really learn just in a couple of games. You can't really that's seasons of bulking up and learning some of, you know, just the right angles to take and where your help's coming from and all that type of stuff. So that's concerning for me for sure.
Yeah, he does have some defensive instincts. I think just watching some highlights and some tape, he can sag a little bit too much and, I don't know, play, I guess, lazy defense at times. He had a different role at Duke, so, you know, I don't really know how college defense works that well, but, you know, I think that he anticipated passes pretty well at times in the highlights, obviously the highlights, but that I saw. So I think there's light at the end of the tunnel as long as and he's coachable. He seems coachable. He's excited to play for Stan Van Gundy. So as long as he's willing to put in the work, I think that he can develop those defensive skill sets to at least not be a liability. He's not going to be on the, you know, defensive first team anytime. But as long as he's not a guy that the other team can exploit by switching him you know, on their go-to offensive player, like we saw teams do with Reggie Jackson last year, then I think we'll be okay. But, you know,
and also just a quick point on that. I think Alex Kennedy, who's, I think he covers the NBA for CBS. I'm not sure who he covers him for. But he had polled a bunch of scouts, you know, who their biggest misses were and why. And one of the guys was like, you know, Klay Thompson. Thought he was going to be a really good shooter, but a shooter only, and I thought he was questionable at best on defense. You know, I'm not saying that that's who Kennard's going to be, They do have similar aspects to their game, sure. But, you know, I think Klay Thompson was possibly the best defensive player in the finals last year. He was incredible on the ball. So there's no reason to think that with Kennard and how the thing that I like about him and the thing that, I do trust that he'll be able to figure it out defensively is that he's just clearly has a really great basketball IQ. He's very smart player. You can tell it on the court. He knows, you said it, Joe, he can anticipate really well. He knows where he's supposed to be. Yeah, he might get a little lazy playing a little bit of safety on defense a little bit and kind of just, you know, expecting to shoot up the court and put up another bucket. But that's stuff that can be coached. And if he is coachable, which he appears to be, and he does seem very stoked to be in Detroit, which is another thing I'm happy about, I see no reason why in a couple of years he can't be getting serious minutes and contributing, you know, heavily on this team.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think we're both very high on him, and I was originally for Donovan Mitchell with that pick at number 12. I've softened up to Kennard. I hadn't watched a lot of tape on him before that, so I didn't really have much of a valid opinion. But I am I'm very excited for him, or I'm excited for us to have him. So I think that his shot making ability is something that just can't be underlooked. And Donovan Mitchell was a 35% 3-point shooter last year, or like 34% change. And that could really go either way in the NBA.
For sure.
He could go up 3 yeah. points, he could go down 6 points. Like,
yep.
Kennard is a sharpshooter. So as long as we can get him in position to shoot shots, I think we're in good shape. And that is our biggest weakness right now.
Do you see him playing any point at all this year? Like playing small ball point? Or just like hybrid sort of lineups? Like you have him at the 1, KCP at the 2, maybe Marcus, Tobias, and Lore, you know, like a lineup like that where you're just, it's not the quickest lineup, I know that, but it's more shooting than what's normally on the floor for the Pistons.
Yeah, I don't see him playing point guard, but I do see him putting the ball on the floor and not necessarily running the offense, but us running plays for him with the ball in his hands on offense in order to spread the floor and find other guys, if that makes sense.
I mean, the Pistons run so much motion offense that they just, you know, whoever brings up the ball half the time kicks it off and then starts running around screens. And then if you just give it to Kennard on the wing there, let him work a little mojo, get into the paint. I mean, that's another thing that we both love about him. His ability to find wide open guys when he's in the air, not in the air, when he's, you know, when they're all the way across the court or they're right below the basket is pretty impressive. And I think that skill will translate. So, yeah, I mean, Stan Van Gundy said it over and over and over again during the presser that Kennard is not just a shooter. We did not just draft just a shooter. We think that he's a playmaker first and foremost, who also happens to be the best shooter in college basketball. So that alone should make you pretty happy. And my whole philosophy going into this pick, and I was Kennard when I, you know, obviously if Monk was there, I wanted Monk too. I was, you know, very nervous and I thought there was a moment that we were going to get Monk. But with that being said, in my mind, Kennard was the best shooter in the draft and Pistons need shooting and you just take the best shooter. And, yeah, you know, you might look at this pick 5 years down the road and be like, holy hell. Like, they got that sharp shooter at 12. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it could be that type of thing. So that's what I'm hoping for.
I'm pretty excited for Summer League, and we should probably get into that a little bit in the KCP stuff and all that. But it will be interesting to see how he plays in Summer League. I don't think there's any reason why he shouldn't play well. But just to play out of Duke's system against a different level of competition, see how he stacks up there. Him and Henry Ellenson. I'm pretty excited to see both those guys.
I think we're going to ball out Summer League this year.
Yeah, we should win Summer League.
Go for it. Go for the Orlando chit.
Yeah. So that's going to be exciting.
All right, yeah. I wanted to see if there was any guys that stood out to you that made the Summer League team.
For the Pistons, let me pull up the roster. Pierre Jackson, which is, I like to have.
Yeah, Pierre Jackson. Oh, now it's making sense. I had a tweet with Laz the other day, like 2 weeks ago, and it was something about Summer League or the draft or something like that. And like the number one Pierre Jackson fan just like hopped in and was like, "Oh, you know they sleeping." I was like, "Who is this?
They've been
like,
sleeping for years.
Like, they be sleeping on you, Pierre Jackson." It's like, "Oh, okay."
We all want him to ball out.
Where's this roster? All right, Lorenzo Brown again. Let's see here. Henry Binajay, another former Dookie. Rahlier Hillis Jefferson. Is that? No, that had to be a typo. Hollis Jefferson. I think that's Rondé Hollis Jefferson's brother. Pierre Jackson, Marcus Kennedy, Eric Moreland, Hollis Thompson, Derek Willis, Kentucky. Mike Toby, 7-footer center, Virginia. You were high on him. I remember a few years ago.
Did you say his name one more time?
Mike Toby, 7-foot center, Virginia.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Remember?
Yeah.
That was sweet.
Nasty hook shot.
We should get our boy. I mean, we should get them both on this team. Braylon Racine and
Marcus,
I guess,
Keynes for the Wizards.
Yeah, Marcus Keynes is on the Wizards one, so. Yeah. Anybody stand out? Is it just like, it's just warm ups for Binajay and the other two? Obviously in Ellington.
I think Hollis Thompson's an interesting one. He's only 26. He's a 6'8 shooting guard. He shoots pretty well. I'll look up his numbers. He's at
Temple.
Georgetown.
Oh.
Yeah. His first 2 years for the 76, that's the 76ers, but he's still shot 40% from three. He's had a year of 38% from three and had a year of almost 36% and change. So he can shoot. He's not a bad player. He's still pretty young. So I think that'd be an interesting guy to keep your eye on.
Yeah. I mean, and the Pistons are in such a cap situation right now where, you know, it might just be your best bet to get a couple of these guys, put them into the G League system. And, you know, keep your eyes on them because they might be playing, knowing, you know, whatever it is that they have to do to get under the cap.
I would like to just apologize really quickly because I did say D League earlier, and I said it should have said G League. And that's on me.
That's on you. Should we get to the Pistons, the Ask ITC, the questions?
Yeah. Yeah.
We got a three of them. Let me just look here real quick. And thank you to Grade A Tweets for the submissions, and also to Shamik, friend of the pod. Both friends of the pod at this point. So first question. And yeah, I mean, let's just go for it. Do we think that KCP will still get the max deal? Knowing that, you know, the two teams that were most linked to him were the Brooklyn Nets, who just picked up Timofey Mozgov's massive contract in order to get D'Angelo Russell, and the Sixers, who just drafted a guard, and it seems like they're targeting J.J. Redick. They're very serious about getting him. Do we still see... the Pistons being in a sort of situation where they have to offer, and the max, Joe, to my shaky math, is $124 million over 5 years.
No.
All right, now think there's another wrench to this. What's his name? The LeBron's agent is the same guy that represents...
Oh, Rich Paul.
Rich Paul is KCP's agent as well. So...
I don't think his market value is max contract. And I think the only teams that would throw that at him would be desperate teams like Brooklyn and the 76ers, who are looking a lot less desperate after recent events in the last week or so, with the Nets picking up Mozgov's contract, but also getting D'Angelo Russell. They're also taking a look at J.J. Redick, too. So he would go for a lot less than KCP. And then the 76ers, I don't really see that happening. I mean, they have a lot of really good young players. I think they need more of just a go-to
like a vet
shooter. Yeah, or like a vet. I mean, they have playmakers on offense. I think KCP is just too inconsistent for a max contract. Still, I wouldn't be mad if we did max that, but I don't see any teams offering that to them him. I think it'll be probably $20 million or so less than a max, which I'm grateful for because he does have a lot of holes in his game. So I mean,
that'd still be $21 million a year. Like, that's not a, you know, we're not. Yeah, I kind of put that out there, like saying, like, all right, so what do you think it's going to be then? Like, what would you expect us to be able to re-sign KCP for? Because the Pistons have been vocal that they'll match in the market. And which might hold off teams to putting out offer sheets, knowing that we're just going to come over and match anyways. My fear would be is that you lowball it a little bit and you offer, you know, maybe what if you do offer 100 over five and KCP's like, you know, that's 24 mil cheaper than, you know, what I could be making. And then you kind of slight the player. You could still match. Yeah. So let's say you offer 100 mil, another team offers 110, then you offer, you know, 110 or 112, whatever it may be. Then you can still use, that's not your only offer. You can still, you know, counter, an existing team's offer. I don't know. That's, I don't expect them to pay 124 over five. I would say it's going to be somewhere between the 105 to 115 mil contract.
Yeah, hopefully. I think with our signing of Reggie Jackson, that looked really good at the time. But then it looks a lot less good now. The max contract to Andre Drummond, that was a no-brainer in most people's minds, but doesn't look that as great as it did last year. I just don't think we can hand these huge contracts out to any more players who aren't, you know, completely well-rounded and don't have massive holes in their games like these players do. So that's no knock on them. It's just the fact of the
matter. No, we're Team K. We've been Team Pay KCP all year.
Yeah.
But now that the dust is settled, it does look like the Pistons should be able to offer him a very respectable contract that will be top dollar on the market and, you know, but doesn't have to be the full max, which, you know, let's be honest. Let's be honest here. 124 mil over five. That's a big deal. I don't know. That'd be a lot, but
yeah.
Now that we got Canard Dog. all right. Next question. With the cap going down, do we see any scenario where the Pistons try to shed some salary? I mean, what, we have a player option on Banigay, or a team option on Banigay, I believe. They don't have to bring back Darren Hilliard. Aaron Baines is already gone. Am I missing anything?
John Luer. We could trade John Luer. We could also trade Tobias Harris if the price was right.
So, yeah.
If we think that Henry Ellenson, like Cham, God thinks, is to the point of being a backup power stretch power forward, then John Luer would have a disposable contract. And
I think John Luer is definitely a guy that you could possibly move.
Yeah.
What about Boban?
I don't know. What is his 3 years, $21 million? That's only $7 million a year. I think that's market value, or maybe even less.
But it's tradable. It could be tradable, right? Sure. It could be a pick where, you know, a team with a little bit of cap space could really. I mean, we could use Boban. We've gone over that. There's been plenty of times where the Pistons could have used themselves way more playing time for Boban, and I hope he gets that this year. I think John Luer is really a player that you have to look at that isn't guaranteed to be on this team. I think Marcus Morris's $5 million contract is super attractive to or 5 to 7 mil, whatever it is super attractive to a lot of teams out there. A lot of teams could use a Marcus Morris coming off the bench, or even if you're, you know, more of a bottom feeding team, he could be in your starting lineup as well. So I don't see those contracts being guaranteed. And like you said, Tobias has a very tradable contract too. So to answer your question, the cap did go down about $2 million from 100 mil or 101 mil to 99 mil. Yeah, I could see a scenario where the Pistons shed some salary, and I think they're going to do it this year by refusing to pick up some of these second year options and then second round draft picks contracts, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even mention Reggie Jackson, who was the topic of shedding salary towards the latter end of this season this past year. It's not an attractive deal, and considering his his injury issues, but if we did dump that salary and throw in a future first round pick, we are evaluating the trade market for him. So that's another guy that we could definitely.
Oh yeah. I mean, if this team is not looking right, come the trade deadline, some bodies are getting moved.
Yeah.
Like big contracts being moved, and the Pistons might be hitting the refresh button. So it's a very important year for Detroit.
And to be honest, we're not in the worst position to do a soft rebuild, if that's even a valid term for us, because we were a playoff team once. But if Stanley Johnson, Henry Ellenson, and you know, if we re-sign KCP and Kennard shows promise, then we have a couple young guys who can fill some spots if we do trade away some other guys.
And I'm saying keep Dre. Move everybody else. Dre's still 23 years old, or 24.
Yeah.
Super young.
Yeah, I'd keep Dre as well.
All right, so here's a good question. This is from Shamik. So which Piston were you really disappointed in when they were drafted but exceeded your expectations?
That one's pretty easy for me.
Who?
KCP. And it didn't have anything to do with being disappointed.
It was Trey Burke.
Yeah, it was Trey Burke. I don't know. I didn't watch Georgia basketball, so I was a little disappointed we didn't get Trey Burke. I liked Trey. And we needed a point guard. And that was a situation similar to the Donovan Mitchell pick, or, you know, the Kennard over Donovan Mitchell pick, where I wanted Trey Burke until I watched KCP's game tape, and you could just see how electric he was in college. He was a shooter, and he was incredibly athletic. So I changed my mind pretty quickly. I wasn't totally salty about it, but yeah, I wanted Trey Burke.
Yeah, you know, looking back on it, and I'm going deep now, but no, this isn't actually a reflection of who I was disappointed in. Because I was super stoked about the Brandon Knight pick. I was stoked about Andre Drummond. I was also, you know, I did want Trey Burke, but I wasn't, you know, completely heartbroken. I didn't know who KCP was, so it was a little bit of like an unknown for me. Honestly, the pick that stands out the most to me is I really wanted Justice Winslow in 2015, Stanley Johnson. Everybody thought there was an article on Detroit Bad Boys. I don't remember who wrote it, but it was so good. It was just literally encapsulated all of my feelings from that moment when I thought the Pistons were going to draft Justice Winslow. I thought he was going to be, because he was such a stud at Duke. He couldn't shoot a lick, great defender, national champion, hit all these like X factors. And then we drafted Stanley Johnson, who was a lot of people were like, Chad Ford tweeted out, that's the first biggest disappointment in the draft, the first reach, blah, blah, blah. Now looking back at it, I think Stanley Johnson's going to be a hell of a lot better pro than Justice Winslow is going to be. I still, you know, both you and I are both, you know, full on the Stanley train. And, you know, I think that pick looks good now. You know, I mean, yeah, were there other players that were lower than Stanley Johnson that, you know, when you look at Devin Booker, sure. But with comparing those two players, Justice Winslow and Stanley Johnson, I'm still happy. I am happy now that we have Stanley Johnson.
Yeah, you weren't yelling for Devin Booker to be drafted then, and neither was I. And most GMs just didn't know what he was going to become in the NBA. So That was I mean, that was another one. I was a little bummed out that we didn't get Justice Winslow, but the main one was KCP for me.
Yeah. Speaking of KCP, a little brief Pistons news. I guess we already went over the Summer League team and whatnot, but you mentioned it too, Joe. KCP will be he will have a 2-game suspension for that Dewey DUI or DWI or whatever. So he'll be out for the first 2 games of his possible max contract deal. But that's water under the bridge now.
Yeah. Give some other
anything
players
else,
some
Joe?
Time. No. I don't have much more. I mean, we covered a lot.
Yeah. This is a long one, y'all. You know where to find. You know where to find Inside the Cylinder. iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict. We're on Twitter. Where, Joe?
We're on Twitter at Inside the Cylinder.
Great. I'm on Twitter at the_Fernantula. And you're on Twitter at j.mack. That's DOTMACK.
DOTMACK. Yeah, I'm going to step up my tweet game one of these days. But I just get so wrapped up in reading everybody else's, reading my feed that I just get drunk and tweet. I guess that's the way to do it.
Get on the Sham God sort of radar and then start getting into these, you know. Yeah, I woke up
he
today.
He had to have been drunk when he dropped that stat. Who's the best shooter of the last 10 years poll?
I hope you're listening to the Sham. He said something along the lines of, yeah, this old man at the gym said that Kyle Korver was. It's like, that doesn't mean you put it out to NBA Twitter then.
No, you just let that old man have his minute and yeah. Move on.
You let that old man have his minute, and then you just go home. You go home knowing Steph Curry is the best shooter.
Yeah,
Kyle Korver. I was offended. I was like, you might as well put in Jason Maxiel at that point. Like, why were we asking that question?
Shouts
to Jason Maxiel.
Yeah, no, that's all I really had though. So yeah, until next week, shoot us over a tweet, and we'll talk with you. But thanks for tuning in. Have a great one.
Peace.